Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
FM News Talk 97.1.
That is exactly what I needed to hear.
Thank God someone here knows what they're talking about.
That's us. That's right. Gotta love this American ride. All
right, you need to take the time and get the full picture.
I love the ladies. I mean, they rev my engine, but they don't belong in the newsroom.
It is anchor man, not anchor lady.
What do you want from me? I'm not a married sweetheart.
Goodness sake, kid. Keep your voice down. Your father's listening to the radio.
I'm not a married sweetheart.
This is the Annie Fry Show.
In simple terms, we will have a choice of where to buy goods and services, particularly the goods. So we don't have to buy from China and hence pay the tariff. We don't have to. There are other countries, including Mexico, that are substitutes. So the elasticities can be pretty strong. And I think that plays into it. So any consumer effects, I'll just call the economics consumer effects, I think will be very, very small, Fred, very small. I mean, we've looked at this, Kevin and I, minuscule. And the overall economic picture, the so-called economic burden, is, I think, actually going to shift to China more than it's going to damage the U.S.
Larry Kudlow reacting to the approach to the trade imbalance that has existed with the United States and some of their trade partners for quite some time. The president has been working very hard at making these deals more balanced, more fair for the United States. And on some days we see it looks like that's benefiting, you know, the stock market greatly. Other days it seems as though it's pulling back a little bit as people get nervous. But overall, this economy right now, under President Trump and his administration and the economic policies that he's put in place, has seen quite a bit of success. And joining us now is the chief economist at Heritage Foundation, Stephen Moore. Stephen Moore, thanks for coming on today. We're still waiting for that deal to be done with China, but it seems as though the president is sticking to his efforts in making this more fair for the United States.
Well, I think that's right, Annie. And, you know, what's so interesting is that I think Larry Kudlow had it right. That, you know, we've got a booming economy right now. It's unbelievable. You know, we have 7.45 million more jobs today than there's 7.45 million job openings today. Can you believe that? That's more than the entire state of Missouri. And it's an incredibly strong job market for workers. Wages are rising. So it's just a nice economy we've got right now.
Yeah.
Now, the one kind of dark cloud I see right now is this trade war with China. And by the way, I say this as someone who supports what Trump is doing on China, but it has, you know, knocked down growth a little bit, you know, because trade wars are, you know, hurt both countries. But this is, you know, I regard it as short-term pain for long-term gain. And I think eventually Trump is going to get a victory here. China's going to start playing by the rules and stop cheating and stealing. And when that happens, it'll be good for both countries. You know, China is becoming more of a tyrant and a menace on the global scene with respect to, you know, not only what they're doing economically, but also from a security perspective. So, you know, I think all Americans should get behind Trump on this.
You know, we hear a lot of these economists come out and especially if there is a political slant behind the general presentation that they have either on television or on air on articles about a pending recession that would be coming. This economy can't last forever. I would assume that going into the 2020 election, the way the economy looks in October is going to be pretty important. Do you see the economic success that we've seen so far under President Trump continuing on into the near future?
Yeah, I do. I think that, you know, these kind of booms that we have right now, they don't die of old age. They die because of policy mistakes. And, you know, as I said, I am worried about the trade war. China seems to be more and more belligerent all the time, and they seem to be a little bit dug in. But I do think at the end of the day, I mean, look, these tariffs are killing China. Nobody's reporting about that. They keep saying, oh, it's hurting American consumers and farmers. And, you know, to some extent it is, but, you know, it's, you know, doing 10 times as much damage to China as it's doing to us. So, you know, I think at the end of the day, China will, you know, make the kind of capitulations that it needs to make. And by the way, nothing that Donald Trump is asking China to do is unreasonable. They should do all these things. They should play by the rules and stop cheating and stealing. And so when that happens, I think you're going to see that the economy just explode once we get a better trade deal with China. And then you're likely to see, you know, 3.5% to 4% rates of growth. And, you know, it's something we never accomplished in 8 years under Obama.
We're speaking with Chief Economist at the Heritage Foundation, Stephen Moore, also author of the book Trumponomics, Inside the America First Plan to Revive Our Economy. Now, we've seen what President Trump's economic policies have done so far for the economy. We're seeing now what some of these 2020 hopefuls on the Democratic side are considering, what kind of economic policies they have. For instance, Kamala Harris, she wants to up the estate tax, and she wants to up the estate tax in order to help pay teachers more. Is that an economic policy that you can connect to one another? If the estate tax goes up, do teachers make more?
She wants to increase the estate tax so that they can pay teachers more.
That's the talking point that she has. What kind of connection is there?
You know, schools should be a local state, you know, function. They're not a function of the federal government. The federal government shouldn't be taxing the, you know, if people in Missouri want to pay their teachers more, people in Missouri should pay for it. I mean, that's our federalist system we have. So that's number one. Number two, I should eliminate the estate tax. There should be no state tax. I mean, you pay all your taxes when you're live. You pay your income taxes, your sales taxes, your property taxes, your all these, you know, gas tax, all this stuff, and then they want to tax you when you die? I mean, that's just immoral. It's anti-American. And so, you know, if you've already paid tax on it, why should somebody have to pay for it, you know, on their deathbed? And so it's an unfair tax. I think most Americans understand that. And, you know, the whole American dream is about getting rich and being able to pass the money on to your children and your grandchildren. And so, no, I hate that idea. I think it's, and by the way, if you do that, if you tax away the estates of people, they'll just spend all the money when they're alive. They won't pass it on. You know, you'll get an economic destructive impact where people will just, you know, spend money on luxurious items while they're alive so that the government can't take it from them when they die.
You know, I'm curious about a lot of these very, you know, you listen to the Bernie Sanders, the Elizabeth Warren. Elizabeth Warren has a plan for everything. She wants to eliminate student debt. Like, she's got some pixie dust that she can snap her fingers and it just disappears. What does a promise like that to the American people, in order to get elected, she says, if you vote for me, I'm going to eliminate your student loan debt. How does that policy, if she were to get her way, if she were able to get that through Congress and make that student loan debt go away and provide free college for individuals, how does that actually affect the American taxpayer, the American voter?
Well, first of all, it's probably one of the most unfair policies ever to basically tell people who paid their student loans or paid their university costs themselves, like, for example, by working while they're in college, that now they have to pay more taxes to pay for people who are irresponsible and took out these big loans that they can't afford to repay. And how is that fair?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
I mean, really, I mean, where does the left come up with these ideas of fairness? People who did the right thing and, you know, saved and then, you know, spent their own money and then found ways to diligently pay their debts on time, they get punished? I mean, I don't even understand liberalism anymore. I mean, it's like the people who, you know, default on their loans, they're not going to have to repay them. And, of course, the other thing that's unfair about this is that also means people who didn't go to college are going to have to pay more taxes to pay for people who did go to college.
Yeah.
I mean, how is that fair?
Yeah, and you're going to continue for the rest of your life if that's the way we're going to provide this higher education for American students. You may not pay for it in the 4 years that you're not making any money and you're in college, but then you get that job, hopefully, and you start a career. That's going to hit you for the rest of your life in your income taxes, because we're all going to be paying for this on the other end. It just doesn't look directly like a check written to a specific institution.
Neither a tuition. And in the big, it ignores the source of the problem, right? Which is, the problem is, it is completely outrageous The greatest financial scam in America is what universities and colleges are charging American families. It's ridiculous. I've got a son who's going off to college. It's going to be $65,000 a year. It's just, it's thievery. It's stealing. These colleges, every college in America should cost half of what it does. Then you ask the question, why do they get away with it, these colleges and university bureaucracies? And it's because, you know, we keep subsidizing it. You know, we keep throwing money at the universities. And you know, by the way, you know this, every time we increase the Pell Grant amounts and the amounts of money we give to students for going to college, then the universities just raise their tuition. So it's like a dog chasing its tail.
Yeah, you know, when you look at how the government provides loan money to students to afford these college educations, is there any incentive currently in place right now for these institutions of higher education? Is there any incentive for them to be competitive?
No, zero.
On a tuition
zero.
Standpoint?
Most, and by the way, a lot of these universities have gigantic, endowments. I went to the University of Illinois in Champaign-Urbana, and when I was there, this was 30-some years ago, it was $1,000 a semester. Now it's $10,000 a semester.
Yeah.
I mean, a tenfold increase in inflation? What other industry has had that kind of increase? So, you know, we just subsidize bureaucracy and waste and inefficiency in government, in these universities, and you know, then they have these speech codes, and they have, you know, the liberals. I'll just struck one thing you said. You're talking about, well, you're going to make the money up, you know, on the way throughout your working life. Well, these kids who are, you know, graduating with degrees in, psychology and women's studies and, you know, that kind of stuff, I'm not so sure they are going to make it up. I mean, they'd be better off getting a degree, you know, a vocational, learn how to be a nurse or learn how to be a carpenter, learn how to be an electrician. That probably will pay off more in life than getting a liberal arts education.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, is there any type of policy that could be put in place to force universities to compete more for the basis of the consumer, the student, the family that is going to be paying this tuition? Is there anything that could be done to cause that competition to exist in a better capacity?
You know, you're there in Missouri.
Yep.
And I went to, have you ever been to the College of the Ozarks?
Yeah, I've seen it, yeah.
It's an amazing school. I mean, I go out to universities all over the country and give lectures, you know, about 20 a year. And I've never met better students that I like more than the kids at College of the Ozarks. And I think most of your listeners know the tuition is zero at College of the Ozarks because you know how they do it? The kids work while they're in school.
Yeah.
What a concept. Make a 19 or 20-year-old work 15 hours a week. Jeez, I mean, my goodness. What, you know, why not allow the kids to work while they're in school so they can earn their tuition? And by the way, if they had to do that, they'd demand the college. If they had to pay for it themselves, I guarantee you the colleges wouldn't get away with charging $65,000 a year.
Yeah, it definitely is something that needs to be looked at. As long as we're going to continue to throw money at the problem, nobody's going to be pursuing an opportunity to fix it. Stephen Moore, author of Trumponomics, Inside the America First Plan to Revive Our Economy. Thanks so much for coming on today. Always
great
to talk
to
you. We'll talk to you again soon.
Have a great week.
You as well. At Stephen Moore on Twitter and heritage.org for the website there. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, I'm going to tell you about a picture that's on our Facebook page right now. Did you see the picture that I put up on our Facebook page?
Mm-hmm. I sure did.
Tony, have you seen it?
It's good.
I don't think so.
No,
I'm gonna go look right now.
No, don't.
Don't look yet.
Wait until we come back.
Okay. All right, we'll do.
I want to hear your genuine reaction.
Sounds good.
It's indescribable.
I can't wait.
We'll be back in just a second.
You're listening to The Annie Fry Show.
All right, when we went to break, I told Tony he needed to go to our Facebook page. We had some family pictures taken, and by that, my mother-in-law wanted to have pictures taken. Mm-hmm. And so we had some like on the side with just my family taken, and it's my family's fault, but you have to see this picture.
I'm pulling it up right now.
That was sent.
It's perfect.
I might frame it.
I think it's awesome.
You can go to facebook.com/Annie Fry Show and see this photo that is up there right now, but it's one for the ages.
It's those candid shots are the best.
I don't think that was supposed to be candid.
It was actual. That's like actually the faces, like they're like 1, 2, 3 and click.
Nobody said like, let's take a candid shot.
Hey, Charlie's in the game.
Yeah, Charlie's looking
Charlie
good.
Has got his head in the game.
I will add that there are 5 people in the family and he's only talking about Charlie.
Jared's
Look at my daughters. Look at my daughters.
I think Jared's looking at the camera.
No.
No, he's not.
He's I was thinking that maybe the photographer saw like a good moment and didn't warn you guys. And
maybe.
Like, oh, click.
I don't know what I'm doing.
The caption is great. Oh, you're giving somebody some instructions for something. I can tell.
Annie's face.
You go over here and you stand here and oh my gosh.
The caption is great. This is the best one we could muster.
So it's the five people in my family. I kind of want to know from you, the listener, if you think that this is this something that we should frame in our house?
Yes. Oh my God, yes.
Poll of the room is yes.
And when when you know my kids, like especially Evelyn, and you see she's the littlest one. I don't know what anybody's doing. I didn't know this moment happened. I'm shocked that it was captured. And I'm Charlie's like,
Charlie's got his head in the game.
GQ
is
my phone
engaged.
GQ. Oh gosh.
Is this better? When you think about it, would you rather have this framed on your wall this is the photo that came in the frame?
This one every time. Without question.
Mm-hmm. And my first daughter, my older daughter, who I will say is stunningly beautiful in real life.
Mm-hmm. She's like, okay.
And every time I pull this photo up, I laugh out loud.
Oh my God.
To myself.
So
maybe even more than
so great.
The last time. Facebook.com/AnnieFryShow. You really have to see this photo.
It
gets better the more you look at it.
I know.
Just a genuine moment, though. A genuine moment. Calder, like, whatever.
Katie said, I love the candids. Those are the best.
Nope.
Candid, this
that
is
wasn't
not supposed
a candid.
To be a candid.
This was post. Everybody act natural. Click. Jared looks like, my husband looks like someone said, sit here, look at the camera and smile.
And hold this
and
child.
And he was getting ready to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Evelyn cannot be contained.
He looks like he's like 1 second away from being ready. He's almost ready for the picture to be taken.
Charlie's ready.
Charlie's
game is
on it, man.
Evelyn's like, I'm here to party. Jensen's like, I don't know where to look. I don't know what to do.
Help.
I think you are telling the camera person to hold on a second. Wait a second.
We don't appear to be ready.
We're not ready.
That's exactly what that looks like.
I know it's hard to tell.
Please hold.
Please hold.
Stand by.
Go to Facebook.com/AnnieFryShow and look at this.
Those outfits, though, were
amazing
on point.
Picture. Katie
they
would
look
know.
Great.
Because I was. We had instructions. This
Jared's
was,
looking good. I know you talk about how much weight he's lost, but man.
Yeah,
he's looking good.
A lot of weight.
My Slim 180, he and I both did the diet, and yesterday on Father's Day, stepped on the scale in the morning, was the lowest he's weighed probably since
amazing.
Early college, like pre Budweiser is my jam college. Sorry, Jared.
Well, he's our bodyguard next week, so
looking good in New York. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is where you say I'm looking good too here.
Well, you'd look great.
Thanks, Jared.
And you,
everybody walks up. Like if you listen to this radio, this is really funny. If you have not heard, I'm on a diet. I go to my Slim Way. I've lost a lot of weight. So people who I know who listen to the station a lot, Jared and I will be standing next to each other, and they'll come up and they'll look at us and they'll go, man, Jared, you've lost a ton of weight. You look great. How much weight have you lost? And then they never say anything to me because men don't know what to say to women about losing weight.
I see you every day, though, and we've talked about how much weight you've lost.
And
we haven't talked about Jared that much.
And you
about time.
Look good.
What are you supposed to say? Is somebody, like, I guess I could answer this question. What is someone supposed to say to me? When Jared and I are standing next to each other, we're probably about even on weight. I think we've both lost about 30 pounds, give or take, depending on the day.
Is it offensive to say to a woman, like, wow, you look like you've lost a lot of weight?
Probably depends on the day.
Yep.
Gonna be honest.
Is that why people don't say the, I don't know.
I'm not saying it. No chance.
I won't do it. I'm not doing it.
Why?
I still hug dudes.
The same reason?
Same reason.
You don't know what you're getting into.
Mm-mm.
If you don't say anything.
Compliments aren't what they used to be.
No. There's a lot that's behind it. If you walk up to, so my husband and I, we've both lost about the same amount of weight. If you walk up to us and you say to him, wow, you look great. how much weight have you lost? Man, you're looking really good. And I'm standing there, I'm like, yep. If he says to me, wow, you look great. How much weight have you lost? You look really good. What am I thinking? Well, how fat did you think I was before?
What
you
know, I look like before.
Yes, exactly. Which is just honest. So I think that the answer here to be super safe is to not comment about anything.
That's crazy.
But that's not really I do realize that anybody who comes up and makes those comments is being kind. It's like when a woman is pregnant, nothing that people comment about the size of your pregnancy at any given time is good, mm-hmm. ever. Wow, you must be due any day. Nope, 6 months. 6 months in, I got 3 more months of growing this big thing here. Or, wow, you're really tiny. When are you going to start showing or whatever? Then it's like, I guess I'm not doing, you know, there's a female, I would assume, complex of inferiority that exists at all times. But there's never really anything that can be, like, I remember with all three of my pregnancies thinking, I want to write a book that is titled Things to Never Say to a Pregnant Woman. Because people say some really, really dumb things to pregnant women.
I can imagine.
And then when you shift away from pregnancy and you talk about losing weight, I would think that 90% of men would think commenting anything about a woman's weight, no matter what, just the subject even being broached, is terrifying territory.
It's a no-no.
Just don't do it. Okay, so we have a phone call, and I don't have a name. We have a new phone screen or phone system today. I'll just put them on.
We're gonna work towards this.
Hey Gary, thanks for calling the show. His name's Gary.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Yes, there's one way of handling that. There's one way of handling that, I think, and that would be to say, "Hey, you look great," and leave it at that.
Yeah, and not go into detail.
Right, but there's also one way that you can totally take that backhanded compliment and make it really bad by adding one word, and that word is "yet." So, have you lost weight yet?
Yeah, no, yeah, that would be bad.
Anyway, so don't do that, is my point.
That's hilarious. Thank you, Gary. I appreciate the phone call. Glad I got it. I need more phone calls, 314-241-9797, so we can practice with this new system and have it all in ship shape by the time the Glover Show comes on.
We've got to figure it out. It's just, I know the cliche is like, change is always hard, but this phone screen, this call screen is not working.
There is
for me.
Okay. So in the background of what we do on a daily basis, when we talk about phone screen, here's how this works. When you call the show at 314-241-9797, Frank, who is our associate producer and has been with me since basically the beginning of my show, he answers a phone call and he'll say, "What's your name? What do you want to talk about?" So then he puts up on a screen your name, like Gary, and what you want to talk about so that I can get to your phone call as soon as possible. Well, the physical computer screen that I look at every day to see that is all brand new. And the phone system that I use to like push buttons to physically put you on the air, that's all brand new. And as I said to Katie before the show started, I was like, I was just going to give it a whirl and push buttons until good things happen. And then I realized that the first person that I need to put on the air is Senator Roy Blunt. Not the one that I want to screw up. And I told him that. You can go back and listen to that at 971talk.com/Annie. So there are lots of buttons here. I'll take a picture of this and put it up on our Facebook page. There are lots of buttons to push. It seems as though there are a lot of ways to screw it up. And so we're just giving it our best shot. But everything looks different.
Yes.
The process is a little different. And we're making it up as we go.
It's just a little bit more unclear to see what's going on. And I don't know how that could happen.
From where I sit, there are a lot of things that I'm physically doing and paying attention to while I'm talking to you. So I'm talking in the microphone. I'm trying to make a coherent point, but I'm also looking up something on the internet, or I'm also reading the callers that are on the phone screen, or I'm also looking for some piece of sound that I can play that subsidizes my point. This call screen is not easy to digest, but it's brand new. I'll give it time.
Yeah.
And if it's what we got, it's not like they're going to change it again. But it's new, so we're struggling. What do you call it, the struggle bus?
Struggle bus.
Mary Helen, thanks for calling the show.
Hi. So I agree with the previous caller about, you know, you just, when you see somebody and you notice there's a difference, you look good and just stop there.
Yeah.
And particularly because as we've talked before, I've been pregnant 6 times. Ooh. I completely understand the whole people just say the dumbest thing and then they want to touch you.
Yeah. No.
It's like, no. Why? I don't get that.
I always want to say, let me touch your belly first.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. let me invade your space. So my oldest son had just come back from the Marine Corps and it was the first time I had all 6 of my kids in the same place in like 4 years.
Yeah.
I wanted a picture. It's all I wanted. So I had them and their significant others, the ones who are old enough to have those, and they would not all look in the same direction, all smile. They would not do it all at the same time. And finally, in frustration, I'm like, look, just shut up, look at me and smile. And then I counted, and they all looked to the left. Except one of them who looked to the right.
Yeah. Yeah. That's. Did you print any of those photos?
Oh, hell yeah. It's hanging on my wall.
I love it. Mary Helen, thank you so much. And thank your son for his service for us. We appreciate it.
My daughter also joined the Navy, so I'm just real proud all the way around.
You should be. Sounds like you have a wonderful family and you're a good mama. Yeah, I might be printing this. You got to go to facebook.com/Annie Fry Show and see the disaster/masterpiece that is our family photo. Maybe, and also I want you to comment, which person do you identify with most in this photo?
Yes.
Because there is a lot of difference going on with each one. I am definitely in the middle of directing something, which I should have probably just shut my mouth and sat still and smiled, which is what my husband is doing. And my 3-year-old is doing her 3-year-old thing. And like we said, my son, he's ready to go. Mm-hmm. He was told what to do and he did it and he's looking pretty good at it. So facebook.com/Annie Fry Show and go see this picture and tell me whether or not you think I should print this one or if I would be better served to try to find the best one of us posed. The one, there is one that looks good, but my eyes are half open in it. And I don't want to put a bad picture of myself on the wall.
Yeah. I say this one. That's my vote. I think that's Tony's vote too.
It might happen.
No doubt.
On my mantle, I have this big, like, 4 foot by 2 foot or whatever it is, picture or whatever that I, from several years ago, like, Evelyn was barely walking. So whatever picture we would get would go up there.
What a great conversational piece. Look at how this happened.
As if the hot mess express that you have to walk through in order to get to the mantle in my house wouldn't be indicative enough of what kind of life we lead in the Fry House. I'll tell you what, we're fun people, though. We have fun. Clearly. Mm-hmm. Just check out Evelyn. You'll see it. Facebook.com/Annie Fry Show. We'll be back in just a second. We're going to speak with the retired Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood, who's going to give us a lay of the land of what is taking place in Iran. There are a lot of very interesting conversations happening right now. An Iranian official has said that the United States and Iran are headed towards confrontation. Yikes. Don't like that. We'll find out from Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood in just a minute what is going on over there. Stay tuned.
You're listening to The Annie Fry Show.
President Trump has done everything he can to avoid war. We don't want war. We've done what we can to deter this. The Iranians should understand very clearly that we will continue to take actions that deter Iran from engaging this kind of behavior.
So we're seeing news coming out of Iran, and it seems as though a confrontation could potentially be imminent with Iran. We're not 100% sure what the next event is going to be, but it definitely seems as though there are tensions there. And to get the latest on the information of what is actually taking place there and why is this happening right now, we are joined now by the retired Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood. Thanks so much for joining us, Colonel. We appreciate your time.
It's a real pleasure to be with you. Thanks.
So can you kind of set the stage, a 101 simple look at what is taking place in Iran and why all of a sudden this is becoming a much more intense situation with the United States?
So it's real quickly, its origins are with the Obama administration in agreeing to this nuclear deal with European powers and Iran to restrict the growth of Iran's nuclear program. Many critics said that was flawed because it did nothing to dismantle the program, and it also did nothing to address Iranian support to terrorist groups throughout the Middle East and their development of other military capabilities like rockets and missiles and those sorts of things. So roll forward. Trump administration comes in, withdraws from the deal because of these serial violations that Iran had perpetuated, continued support to terrorist activities against Israel and elsewhere, and they clamped sanctions on the sale of oil and restricted access for Iran to the global finance markets. Iran is now responding to that, like a child who's told that they can't have something, and so they got violent. They've attacked upwards of six tankers, oil tankers. They've supported the Houthi rebels in attacks on Saudi oil infrastructure. And these last two that we've seen have really spurred global attention because Iran has in many ways been caught in the act, trying to take away unexploded ordnance, capturing some of the tanker crewmen on one of the two tankers, and refusing to allow tugboats to take one of the stricken tankers back into port where it could be repaired. So we've kind of reached a point where Iranian violence is being met with counterforce or threats by the Trump administration, and we're going to have to see how Iran continues to respond to that.
According to Fox News, Iran is set to break its uranium stockpile limit set by the nuclear deal within 10 days, and also the spokesperson said that they are acknowledging that Iran has already quadrupled its production of low-enriched uranium. That is something, just as somebody who doesn't know all the ins and outs and the details. Those are all very scary words for people to hear. What does that really mean, and what kind of threat is it to the United States?
Well, it's actually nuclear blackmail. So Iran is saying, if you don't allow us to have our way, we're going to enrich the uranium that we produce from a very low grade of enrichment useful in civilian power plants to a higher order of enrichment that's useful for the manufacture of nuclear weapons. So they're saying, if you don't let us want to do what we want to do, we're going to develop nuclear weapons. And that has everybody on edge, because a nuclear-armed Iran more emboldened to support terror groups, the terror groups that it supports more emboldened to behave more violently, because it's much more difficult to deal with a nuclear-armed adversary, as we're seeing in North Korea. So whereas the international community had promised to provide fissile uranium for use in nuclear power plants, to take away the byproducts produced by a nuclear plant, that's not good enough for the Iranians. And so, you know, they're wagging this nuclear stick, saying we want our way. And we'll just have to see if the Trump administration holds the line on this, and whether the international community, especially the Europeans, come to the support of the United States in our position.
We're speaking with retired Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood, an expert on Iran and foreign policy. We've seen quite a bit of President Trump's diplomatic and economic foreign policy in action. We've seen sanctions with various places around the globe, and certainly there have been sanctions on this region as well. Do you think that that is how this is going to continue to play out with this administration and their reaction to these events, or do you see this escalating to another level?
No, I think they prefer the economic and the diplomatic tool, but diplomatic words don't have any impact if there's not military force behind them. You know, some kind of a consequence. If you won't talk, then we'll have to take action. So the military and the diplomatic go hand in hand. The economic tool really strikes home. Do people are able to engage in the marketplace? Do you have jobs? You know, what are the state revenues that provides various subsidies for populations? And so it's a very powerful tool because it has a fairly quick effect. So this is the avenue that the Trump administration is going down. Certainly this administration doesn't want to get involved in a war in the Middle East when they've been trying so hard to get out of those wars. And as you've probably noted in previous programs, this global competition with major powers, the United States dealing with Russia, the United States dealing with China, you don't want to bleed attention away from that by getting embroiled in yet another conflict in the Middle East. So I think the flow of military force to the region is a clear signal that if we can't talk about this and we can't deal with this in other ways, then the military option is always present. And it's an effort to get them to talk instead of to fight.
Is Iran trying to get the attention of the United States? They're trying to, what is their goal when they're attacking these tankers? What are they trying to do?
No, it's absolutely, as you just said, it's an indirect approach to get the United States' attention and really to pressure other countries to pressure the United States. So we produce enough of our own energy that we're not dependent on Middle Eastern oil. The Asia-Pacific region is, and to some extent the European economies are. And so by attacking tankers, it drives up the cost of oil. That has a negative economic impact on all these other countries, as well as increasing the amount of revenue that Iran does get for the amount of oil that they can get out of their area. So if you're causing pain for friends of the United States, the thought would be that those friends, Germany, France, the Great Britain, and others, come back to the United States and says, hey, knock it off. Your actions and this maximum pressure economically is having consequences that affect us. So I think that's ultimately Iran's end game, is to cause pain for others so that they influence the United States.
And the leadership of Iran, I think people, especially over the course of the last, I guess, 20 years or so, get it's very confusing to know who's leading and whose influences and authority in the Middle East exist in the present. What is the Iranian government looking to do? Just gain authority and prestige over that area, or who's behind the efforts here?
Yeah, I think that there are three courses. One is just personal power. You know, people who get into positions of power want to maintain that hold on power. So it's regime stability and longevity with the religious leaders in Tehran. Number two is, if they're true believers, then it's the imposition or the spread of a Shia version of Islam over the Sunni version. So you see this clash between Shia, Persian, Iran, with Sunni, Arab, Saudi Arabia. And so that's the second component. And the third one is really just expanding that influence. You know, as a very proud nation state that culturally has roots all the way back to the Persian Empire, they would like to see their influence across the Middle East and potentially up into Europe as well. So I think on those three fronts, the current regime in Tehran, hold on power, spread of their religious identity across Islam, and then a re-extension of this Persian Empire kind of control and glory over the greater Middle East.
Last question for you. We're speaking with Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood. Is Iran receiving any support from any foreign entities in their efforts so far?
Well, anybody who's opposed to the United States is going to get the support from entities like North Korea, China, and Russia. So, I mean, in the great global contest among these competing things, you know, perhaps Russia doesn't agree with Iran and their methods and techniques, but if it's causing problems for the United States, I think Vladimir Putin views that to his favor. And if you're China, you would rather the United States be distracted with things in the Middle East and contesting regions in the Indo-Pacific region. So they will get diplomatic support in the United Nations and in these kind of court of world opinions, painting the United States as a bad guy.
That sounds like the enemy of my enemy is my friend kind of
stuff.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, retired Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood. It's a pleasure to have you on here. Thank you for explaining that to us. We really appreciate it. We'll talk to you
again.
My
pleasure.
Soon. Yep. You can find him, more information about him at heritage.org as well. Thank you for sticking with us today. We've had an interesting show. Senator Roy Blunt joined us at 12:10 and is talking a bit about that bill that he is working on with some co-workers there in the Senate to make adoption more affordable for families. That is such an important discussion to have. I feel like we so frequently are talking about pro-life, 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 save the baby, save the baby, save the baby. We do have to engage in conversations that exist in order to support these women who are left to have this child without the other person who helped create that life being present. And adoption is absolutely a great way to do that. So if you want to listen to that interview, you can find it at 971talk.com/Annie. All right, we can take phone calls in this coming hour. And And by that, I mean, I think we can take phone calls in this coming hour.
We hope.
314-241-9797. Help me test this new phone system. We have lines are open right now. 314-241-9797. We have a brand new system. It all looks different. Katie and I are kind of staring at it, like waiting for it to do what it's supposed to do without our help, because we're not 100% confident in what we're doing. Would love to hear from you. 314-241-9797. Back in a minute.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.